School is out. Now let's get real with Mike Ditzenberger and Miles O'Shea.
Hey, Miles.
Mike, what's up?
Not a lot. Back at it. We want to talk today about something that we've talked about a lot. We ask a lot of WH questions when we enter into our train of thinking. Today, we're going to talk about the who, and basically kind of like the song, who are you in this system? Who are you? What's your role? What's your purpose? What do you bring into the system of education?
Yeah, flashback. Last week, we talked about the goal, which is the what. So now we're going to go to the who, and that is the people behind the what, the goal, the teachers and the students.
Yeah, I think the teachers, the students, I think even the administrators, the constituents of the district, the school board. But we're gonna keep it pretty level-headed. If you're a teacher and you're thinking who you are in this system, think about what it is your personality is, the things that you accept and reject in society, and how that affects your teaching. And then pairing that with who is in front of you, what's the makeup of the people that are in front of you? Where do they come from? What sort of community do you live in? What is the feeling of that community? And then how does that align with where you are? I mean, if they're different things, we still have to figure out how you are bringing you into the classroom, doing what's best for kids, or even as an administrator, how are you directing the flow of the things within your school district based on all those things I mentioned too?
And I'm going to get a little worked up here first thing, Mike, and just say that when we're talking about the who, we're acknowledging the human component of this whole experience. And a lot of people now, I think, want to reduce this to standards, alignment, a curricular resource, achievement. And we forget the human part of it. And that's the most important. And for teachers, for administrators, for district personnel, for school board members to remember, this is all just about people. And the who is acknowledging those individual differences that make this whole thing special and what it should be. It's all of those other things I said, but it's all about people. So let's talk about the people that are coming into that space and how those individual factors influence what we get on the back end of the whole thing.
Yeah, I think being a teacher today or any day is a difficult task if you look at some of the responsibilities, what you have to do. So I mentioned before this podcast when we were talking that, okay, as a teacher, I'm walking into a classroom and I've really got a big job to do. I'm on my left hand, I might have a resource that's been district approved that I know I have to use. Let's call it a textbook or whatnot. In my right hand, I know the state standards are out there. I know that there's certain learning progressions that I have to follow. And those are being monitored by me, by the principal, perhaps by the superintendent or the school board. And they've given me a resource that somewhat aligns to those. But I am the who that must balance those two things and literally sell them to students in a way that I can measure their acceptance of it after I've sold these things. And I use that pitch sell loosely, but I'm presenting information based on my own personal presence in a classroom. I've got a textbook and I've got my standards. I'm the person that puts all of that together and packages it up for kids in a way that they're going to learn from it. And then I get to assess them on it. That is a big job.
And if it's not that, then we are looking at this thing that it's like information input into the student brain output, like this factory thing.
Yeah.
And that's not it. And I think anyone in a classroom, any teacher, any person who's in education knows that's not it. So let's highlight the human components of it and acknowledge the fact that that teacher, that highly skilled human being, that's the job, that's the work, that's why we're here, and let's go do that. But let's talk about that who in the space of the teacher and the students that makes that whole thing flow. Research statistic, and I think this sounds low to me, the individual teacher in the classroom contributes roughly 30% to the achievement of students. 30% variation in the achievement level of students when you take all the other factors coming into the space, who the students are, what the educational environment is, whatever, a teacher's presence can change achievement up to 30%.
That seems extremely low to me. I mean, I hate to bring research out of it, but I almost want to like bring Hattie into the mix here. I think Hattie would have something to say about that. But the human component in my eyes is way more than 30%. I mean, if you take out the human, let's flip that script a little bit. Take out the human component and offer learning as a passive system. How much of that are kids going to engage, or are anybody going to engage without being spurned or having some inherent internal need for that information? I mean, you and I might go to YouTube to help build a shed or fix a car, but if we didn't have that need, then are we going to go do that? Probably not. If there was somebody talking and convincing me that, wow, this might be a skill that I need coming up, and it's important that all people know this, then yeah, I might pursue that a little further. So yeah, I'd agree with you. I think that's kind of low, but at the same time, that's what the role of a teacher is. That's why we're in front of kids, because we know that our presence is what motivates kids to want to keep coming to school. But we also have to be careful that what we're motivating them with is aligned with what we're supposed to be doing. So how I see what I'm supposed to be doing is going to directly affect how I get kids to want to do that. And if I buy into the fact that I don't agree with it, they're going to follow suit with that. And they're also not going to agree with it. So that who presence in a classroom is big. You know, you might not like what it is you're teaching, but you still got to get that done, because that's what you're being told to do. That's that whole piece of being a subordinate to something higher than you. That's the job.
So Mike, last week when we talked about the goal of this, we talked about how there's different types of goals. There's goals that are made for us. There's goals that we make in conjunction with other people. There's goals that we just make on our own. I think it's important to keep that mindset in line. And you know, as a teacher or as an administrator or a school system, there are goals that are established above you that you have absolutely no say in. Those are our federal and state standards, right? Those, yes. That is the content that your state and your nation have said need to be taught and learned by students.
Right.
And then there's your part in that then, and you're bringing in your own what and your own why am I in this space, and how do I take these things that I'm required to teach with who I am and get them to my students so that they learn them. Your role isn't to say those things that I'm being asked to teach, to cover, aren't important. You could never say that. Your role is to say, this is the mission, and then how do I use who I am to make that happen?
Yeah. So the personal aspect of that, so if you think of one of those arcs, we've talked about this too much, where if you have ever ridden on a plane and you see the plane is like a little blip on this screen that shows you where you are in your destination, that I think is a great visual representation of what we're supposed to do in a classroom. So what we're governed to do, what's put upon us by the state, by our administrators, by the powers that be, we have to show that. And I think that families deserve to know where their children are in that process. So I might have given you that arc or that plan ahead of time, and now you get to see the progression of your student or of your child as that happens. But the personal side of that is the experience that those children leave with, and they might talk about for years to come. That, well, I remember having Mr. O'Shea as a teacher. He was really there for me, and I appreciate that. That guy's a great guy. They might not remember every piece of that arc of where they were, but that doesn't mean it's not important, because that was a building block into what becomes their future. And you as the person are a visual or a memory within them that comforts them and says that they were there for me along the way. So I think both pieces are of equal value. I don't want to say that, you know, we shouldn't be governed by standards and progressions. We should be. I mean, that holds us accountable. But personalizing that is what brings everybody along for the ride. And it creates a wonderful sense of community when you're a piece of that part of their lives. Very important in my world anyway.
Yeah. And I think that thinking about this from a teacher's perspective, again, I'm going back to the goal, but I can't get away from this goal thinking right now. But when you're exploring who you are as a teacher coming into the educational space, it's essential that you understand what your goal is, what your personal life mission is in that educational space, and know what that is. And then make sure that that goal for you aligns with what you're being asked to do in your profession. But you've got to know what that is first. And if you don't have that goal for yourself, that's the who. If you don't have that, then you better think deeply on it and get it. And if you do have it, you better make sure that you're able to get that really into alignment with what you're being asked to do. Because I think the trap for teachers is, and I would tell anybody, 20 years ago, I couldn't picture myself speaking this way. You better know that part of your what you're being asked to do is to get kids to achieve on those assessments, whatever they are, to get them to learn. And this is the way that your state or wherever is helping to measure that. That's part of what you're charged to do. But then if I just walk into a space and say, I don't agree with standardized testing. I don't agree with the standards. This ruined education. I've already lost. And then I should honestly be somewhere else. If I can't find a way to get my mission to align with what someone else has said the goal is and make that our goal, I got to get out.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. In fact, I'm going to go so far as to say that let's imagine that there's two types of parents or people looking from the outside into your classroom. So imagine that there's parents that are saying, I just want to know what my kid's learning, and that's how I'm going to feel comfortable. What are you teaching my child? What is my child learning? And there's other parents that are going to say, what is the experience in the classroom for my kid? How is my kid reacting to being in your classroom? And I'm saying, matching with what you're saying, our job as teachers is to pair both of them. We need to find that common ground. I need to be able to drive learning in my classroom in a way that's meaningful for every child. And that way you're satisfying both sides of that, because there's everybody in between as well. That's an extreme model, but think about it. I've heard parents say, I just want to know that my kid is learning in that classroom. I have had that conversation with parents. I've even had the conversation where parents say to me, I don't care whether my kid's happy or sad in the classroom. I want to know that they're learning. Learning is important to our family. Mm-hmm. I've also had meetings with parents that are saying, I don't necessarily care how much they learn. I just want them to have a good experience with school. Mm-hmm. And I'm saying, if you have those conversations with enough parents, those are the two main things that teachers are tasked to do and principals are tasked to do within a school. You've got to do both. You have to drive learning towards a goal, and you have to make it in such a way that it is accepted by all students, that students want to come into that space.
It's funny that you say that, and this isn't about Miles O'Shea, but I would tell all of my classes, I have two goals for you as students in my class. I want you to, one, love being here. And I want you to, two, do great work and learn a whole lot. One and two. And yes, those two things are simultaneously possible and will happen here. Those are our goals. Love being here, do great work and learn a whole lot. We're going to work on those two things.
Right. I want to maybe shift this conversation into the realm of, or do you think that there are people in schools that don't think this way, that maybe have different motives? And if so, How do we encourage people to get back into a way of thinking toward welcoming students into a classroom, yet still having an academic goal in mind?
I keep floating around this idea with you, Mike, in the conversations that we have, in that I feel like a lot of times we think that we're forced to make a choice. Either be the teacher that all my students love being in my space, or be the teacher where I just get things done academically. And we feel like a lot of times that we have to make that choice, either or, when if we could see that they go together. And if without accomplishing both of those things simultaneously, neither one happens well. And teachers fall into that trap, or schools or administrators fall into that trap. I just want everyone to love being in my school. Once that happens, we'll be okay. Or I am just focused on the learning, and that's all I'm drilling down on. And the people, I can't be focused on the people, because it's got to be together. And to answer your question, I guess, I feel like a lot of people feel like they have to choose one or the other. Mm-hmm. And when we make that choice, we lose.
And I think that this would be a good time to say, what if this idea were cultivated in a top-down approach? What if the idea of driving academics and a wonderful spot or space where kid learning happens is an idea put forth by the district, by the school board, by the superintendent, to principals, to teachers, to students, to parents, that this could be a pyramid of an idea, of a mission of a district? So imagine spaces where the whole community is pushing for just that. I would like a strong learning goal for my child, and I would like a very serious learning atmosphere created where my child wants to go. That's what we want as a community. The superintendent models that, and this is our vision and mission. We're going to do this. And principals then say, this is what I want to see in classrooms. I want to see our goals posted, and I want to see kids openly engaging with their teacher in trying to meet those goals.
I think that's it, right? That's it, Mike. And that's the who. That is the person who can come into that space and do that. And as educators, I have done it. And I got corrected by some of my early mentors who brought me back. Oh my gosh, they sapped all the fun out of education. We're only supposed to work on these standards and take these tests. That's not fun. That's not why I got it. It is 1,000% possible to have standards, which seem to me to be completely reasonable, and have some assessments, which also seem to me to be completely reasonable, and also have an awesome educational experience and make it fun and creative and exploratory all at the same time. Those things all go together.
And I think, without divulging too much of our own intellectual property, it's a good time to say too, when you walk through the threshold of your classroom door, you might have to check aspects of yourself outside that door and leave them out there. Or you might need to gather up some other things and put them into yourself in order to walk through that door. So we've written about this, we've talked about this, but like, putting your persona together to walk through that door without using too many terms, putting your persona together to walk through that door is probably going to leave some of you out and then add something to you and change you to be in front of children, because you're probably not going to walk around as that same person that you are in the classroom. So that's always what's strange when kids see you outside. You're not the same person in the grocery store that you are in the classroom, because that person in the classroom was purposefully built to be there by you. And you've got to have that understanding that that is a different person. Purposefully.
Right. The who is, Mike, a negotiation of who you are personally, but who you create as your teaching character in your classroom. And like you just said, kind of that persona that you adopt.
Yeah.
But having a deep understanding of that as well, and knowing how to negotiate that in the space. And let me just throw out a quick example. Let's say you're a certified social studies teacher. You love teaching social studies. That's what you were born to do. In along your way, you added a language arts certification to your teaching certificate also. Your district involuntarily transfers you, and all of a sudden you find yourself teaching language arts and you want to be teaching social studies. Well, if you come into the space with the mindset that I'm a social studies teacher being forced to teach language arts, I don't think I can do this well, I'm not connected with this, this isn't what I love to do, what do you think are the results? What are the results going to be in your classroom? Or if you're able to take your professional self and say, you know what, my main goal is to help kids and make them have an awesome experience and prepare them for a good life after they're with me. And to be able to do that, I'm going to have to put on my I love language arts persona right now and find a way to be vulnerable and honest with my kids, but also sell this and not let that other stuff, the fact that I got moved, I need to be my best for my kids in this space and make them truly believe that I love language arts for them. And I'm going to sell out for that.
Right. And so to anybody listening to this, I've been saying parents, teachers, anybody listening to this, imagine the job of a teacher right now. And I'm going to give you a little shout out, teachers. Imagine being that social studies teacher who has a firm political and religious belief. You cannot take that into the classroom because that we are told not to do that. We do not mix those things with our students. However, you must teach children to develop their own political identity or show them what all is out there. Teach that without bringing your own into the classroom. It's essential. And I know that's kind of a taboo subject to talk about, but we might as well talk about it just a little bit. You can't bring that part of yourself into a classroom, but you have to help develop it within the children in front of you. Not necessarily a religious education, unless, of course, you're teaching at a religious school. But even though that's part of who you are, you have to check that down a little bit and maybe get something else to go into that space. That's a tough job.
And like you said, shout out to teachers. What a really, really hard thing to think about doing in that, you know, people, I think if you have a real conversation with them, if they're religious, they would say, hey, my religious beliefs come out in my actions and who I am. Not that you even have to outwardly talk about them, or my political beliefs aren't driving me. They are like who I am. And then I align with a certain political philosophy because of that. What a hard, hard thing for teachers to negotiate. But it is that mindful awareness of your persona in the space, who you are, not just who you are outside, who you present to others and how that influences your students all the time, because they're watching, they're listening, and that person that drives what they do.
Yeah. And I see a lot of areas where I've been in contact with teachers that do it well, and I've been in contact with teachers who struggle with it sometimes. And when you hear things like, well, I think that students need to be disciplined and have structure, and I agree with those things. I agree with a lot of those things. However, you've got to be able to change based on the people who are in front of you and what they need. That part of you is what they need. So if that part of you needs to change based on what they need, your acceptance of that change or that molding of who you are to meet their needs, I think, is essential. Being rigid and cut and dry about that, I don't think is always best for kids. But we've talked about this before. If I'm a very open person and loud in my classroom and very excitable, but there's kids in my room that don't need that or are put off by that, I need to tone that part of me down for them. I need to check that piece of me outside the door, because that's not what all my kids need right now. But I have the craft of what I'm doing as a teacher requires me to notice that take inventory of it and get everybody what they need based also on what I have to teach them. That's a hard job. And if it takes a great deal of mindfulness from the educator to realize that.
And the other half of the who are you? And then the other half of that, what you're talking about, Mike, are who are the students, which is equally important to understand. And I think the question to ask yourself again is, why am I in this space? What's my goal? Is my goal to be happy at all times and just, you know, for myself? Or am I here for them? And hopefully the answer is we're here for them. And if we're here for them, what do I need to understand about their needs and who they are to change my actions for them? And anyone who's been in the profession for any amount of time knows that every group needs a little something different from you. Each student needs a little something different from you. And if it's the other way, if you feel that way, or you've been taught to feel that, you do it the same and they adapt regardless. I'm on the other side of that.
Yeah. Let's layer in on top of that. Who are the people who are overseeing what you're doing? So if you're subordinate to, let's say, a principal or a school board or superintendent, they also come into the game too with who you are. What do they expect out of you? And is what you're doing in the classroom aligning to what their expectations are? Because I've always said, no matter who I am definitely somebody very good at doing what I'm told to do. That is essential for me, because if I have a boss and that boss wants to see something and that boss is writing the paychecks for me, you better believe I'm going to do what's being asked of me. And if I don't know what that is, it is my job to ask questions to find that out. And I would say the same for teachers, is know who your people are that are hiring you. What is it that they want to see from you? And if you don't know, ask. Because one of the worst things is to go off in one direction and not know that that direction isn't what they're looking for. That could be an awkward conversation down the road. Make sure that that aligns too.
And Mike, I don't, sometimes I think that, like, on this podcast, if someone would listen, if sometimes there's some apprehension, you got two principals, two administrators talking mainly about teaching, you know, but I want the message to be that I'm a teacher. Mm-hmm. You could give me any job that you want, and I would just identify as being a teacher first. But finished a book, is called Extreme Ownership. It's written by a couple of Navy SEALs. Really, really good, but a great perspective on being a leader from the spot where you are within the system. And one thing you just talked about is in there, in that, say you're a teacher and you don't feel as though your administration has given you clear goals for which you're trying to meet, it's your responsibility to approach them, to work with them and say, hey, I don't know, I don't feel as though I know quite what the goals are, what we're trying to accomplish and how we're trying to do it. That's your responsibility. If you don't go up that chain of command and do that, then you're failing at your level of leadership. If you just always feel as though, hey, my level is screwed up because the person above me isn't leading me, you're failing too, because you're not helping them to realize that you're not clear on the mission. You're not clear on the goal. Same way, principals, if you're feeling as though you don't have clear mission direction or idea of what the goals are, it's your responsibility to go up that chain of command one to the people who are above you and help them see that. And hopefully you're in an organization where you feel comfortable to do that. That's the goal. That's the idea of that extreme ownership. But everyone within the system has to be able to approach that person above them and say, hey, I'm feeling a little uncomfortable here, or I'm going in this direction. Is that where you want me to go?
I love this podcast. I love that we're talking about this, because it's really getting into the complexity of our craft. There is so much more to teaching well than grabbing a book and doing a lesson and then having a quiz on Friday. And when we talk about doing this job well, and we start identifying all the stuff that goes into just having a great classroom, I think a lot of people don't think of it on a regular basis. I don't think that it gets identified, especially not outside the walls of a school. I don't think that a lot of people see teaching and learning this way. And that's what makes it so difficult.
It is hard, Mike. And let's be real for a second. I don't know that, you know, if you're an educator, you're probably listening to this podcast. But if you're not and you're listening, I don't know that sometimes people understand the complexities of it. And we're not making excuses here. We're looking for ways to overcome some things within the situation and help people. But a lot of the reading I've done on business leadership or leadership in general says a leader should have no more than 6 direct reports, right? So you shouldn't supervise any more than 6 people directly and be expected to have a great functioning team. An administrator, a school principal sometimes, it has 40 or 50 or 60 direct reports that they are trying to lead and supervise. And if you're a teacher within that system, just thinking about this, think about the burden on that administrator to try to provide really good support to you as they have 5 or 6 times the amount of direct reports that is a good number. So we all have to, in our system, find ways to overcome that and to be leaders in our system, exploring the who of why, who I am and why I'm here to help overcome that.
Right. I mean, and on top of that, there is a lot of gray area that we just mentioned at the beginning of the podcast too. Not only are you doing that as a school leader or as a classroom leader, you also have to take into consideration the pulse of your community. What does your community expect as a whole? What type of community are they? Where are all of your parents? How are you getting to know all of them? So now you've got 30 kids in front of you. You've also got their parents, their family cultures coming into this classroom. They are very carefully watching what you're doing and how you're doing it. They want to make sure their kids are happy when they're coming into their classroom and they're leaving your classroom learned with something. I mean, it's a big, big job. But knowing that it is that big of a job should be in the background of all great teachers' minds. And if it's not, we need to have the conversation about how to turn that around and get that into the back of your mind. Otherwise, we are creating problems for our system. Problems that sometimes we even see on the news. I mean, these could be small problems all the way to big problems because we didn't check something at the door or we didn't gather something up that we needed in order to enter that space. And when too much of that happens, if we don't check enough or if we don't gather up enough, problems will happen. And I think sometimes that's where our profession gets poo-pooed because we were expected to do something by a particular piece of our community that didn't get done, or we were expected not to do something and it did happen. And then we find ourselves under scrutiny for it.
To me, Mike, anytime that we start to drift astray like you're talking about, or we feel like we're not working towards the goals that we have, or, you know, uncomfortable in the system, we just return to one thing, and that's the title of the podcast, The Who. If you buckle down and focus in on the people, the teachers, the students, the families, the people in the system, then put the structures in place that best serve those people. And if, you know, we're led astray a little bit, remember that this is a people business, and we first have to deeply understand the who. We got to understand the people doing the teaching, and we got to understand the people who we're serving. And that a lot of times will bring you back to the true purpose and help you set those goals like we talked about last time.
Right. And understanding too that we do serve not only our families, but we also serve the system that's paying our salary as well. Keeping all of those things in mind, I think, is essential. And it's okay to consider all of that to add to the person that we are walking into that classroom. We do it sometimes unconsciously, but I think that what we're saying too is if we become more conscious of who we are entering into that space, we can make the most of that person who is present for our kids.
I wanted to say another thing about the who that I think that gets lost a lot of times. So I just want to put this out there for people and something I've been thinking about a lot lately. When we said those two things that need to be in the space, need to create an environment that is enjoyable and fun and people want to be in, and also where people are achieving at a high level, I want to call out playfulness. And I think a lot of times when we start to talk about things like achievement and assessments and data and all those things, we get real serious, you know, and it gets too serious. And it is serious. Students learning and or lack thereof is serious because, like I've said, kids' futures are on the line. But we also have to have a playful attitude. And to me, that's one thing that's really important for people when you're talking about the who to bring into the space, that I can have some levity, that I can laugh, that I can joke, that I can say that this isn't just stressful all the time and this thing happened and I'm mad at, hey, you messed up, I can laugh about it and we're okay. And we can have some fun. We wanna have playfulness in this space.
Yeah, I would love to. I'm glad that you brought that up, Miles, because it is important. I mean, it's important enough that it even made the Danielson model, if you think about it. So if there's teachers out there and principals listening to this podcast, flexibility is definitely a piece of it. And like we said before, know how much of that you're bringing into your classroom. Know where the line is. You definitely don't want to overstep it or go too far. And you don't want to go under too much either. But seeing the human side of teachers is what makes that personal experience, that 30% that you mentioned, worth it. You know, even as a principal, I like to kind of mess with kids just to be fun and be a person. Yes, you'll see me walking down the hallway and look at a group of fifth graders coming down the hall, and I'll be like, hey, you dropped something. And they'll look down and I'll be like, ha, it's okay to do that. Let them know that you're human, and at the same time, know that you can also be a principal or a teacher who can put that serious side on when needed, but also has that levity and that latitude to do that because it's fun.
Right. And you have to, you should be having fun in your space. And if you're not, then we need to find some ways to look at the who of who you are and what your goals are to get there, because this has to be enjoyable. And if it's not, it's not.
Right. I just thought about that. You know, the kid that I took 5 minutes of recess from is the same kid that I was like, high five. And then I pull my hand away and go, psych. And then they can't not smile. Yeah, I took 5 minutes of recess because they were screwing around in the restroom or something like that. But at the same time, they also know I'm here for them too. It's okay.
Right. Right.
And both sides can exist in a school.
Right. I think there's more to this, Mike. You know, I do. And I think there's a lot more to the who of the learner side that we'll be able to talk about moving forward, and the ways that people within education systems to understand who the learners are and what their needs are, but also kind of understand what they want and what they want to learn. And I think that that's a huge area of growth for education systems in general, of like meeting the individual needs of students and not doing this mass produced kind of thing. We've talked about that. And I think that's so important, but there are a lot of steps that go to that, but just an understanding that the teacher, the who of who they are, needs to change all the time based on the who of the students and who they are and what they bring into the space.
Yeah, that middle space is where we all share our experiences together. So I appreciated the conversation today. I think it's good that we talk about some of those things. Hopefully we didn't get too taboo or whatnot, but you know, identifying who you are walking into a space based on the needs of your kids is a very big part of teaching. I'd say it's one of the more monumental pieces of being a teacher in 2025.
It's huge. And the last thing I would say about it is don't let anybody else define or dictate to you who you are. You've got to take extreme ownership of that. And don't, the something I've slipped into this at times as an administrator, at times as a teacher, trying to be who I think a principal should be, or trying to be who I think a teacher should look like in this system, rather than following my internal who within the structure of the system, who I can be within the system that the people around me need. And that, I think, that guiding light of taking real ownership of being super comfortable with who I am and who I'm putting out there, but not someone else. I cannot be someone else. I've got to be me. My who has to be me and deeply tied to who I am and what I want to accomplish.
And what they need from you.
Right, right. Ultimately, with the goal of helping people. What if who I'm bringing into the space isn't doing that? Then I need to change in a real way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, well said. All right. Until we come back next week with what we're going to talk about, I thought that was a great conversation.
Okay, Mike, I appreciate it. I hope that people take some good things away from that.
I hope so, too.
You've been listening to School Is Out with Mike and Miles. Appreciate you being here. See you next time.